never told you this, but I never met my father-in-law. Martin's dad passed away a month into us dating back in 2006. I witnessed how his family grieved, how he grieved, and I'd like to think that somehow that's how our souls were married. It must have started there. I also saw how they banded together to pick up the pieces and make sure that not only was the family still solid, but so was everything he left behind for them. Anyway, I figured him, his two brothers, and their mom approached death a lot differently since then, because on an out-of-town family vacation recently, Martin told me to write out a last will and testament, just in case anything happened. Since all the Reyeses and their children would be in a turboprop plane at the same time, there was that possibility that the entire family could get wiped out if an accident were to happen. This is what I married into. And if you think about it, as morbid as it sounds, it's so well thought of. But of course, as I'm sitting suspended tens of thousands of miles up in the air, that's not what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking, man, I hope they never have to open that envelope I have tucked away at home. I hate flying, but I've flown to different parts of the world already. The turbulence will still get me, but I've faked it enough to make it, keeping in mind that statistically it's safer to fly than to drive a car on a highway. I believe the number is 19. You're 19 times safer on your plane ride than the car ride it took you to get to the airport. And that's according to anxieties.com, which is what this episode is all about. Anxiety has been thrown around loosely these days, but if you're a parent, chances are you're no stranger to these things. Imagine having to be responsible for another person around the clock for 3 years after living for yourself for so long. It's a huge change. So how different is it when you're a parent? How has it transformed?
Evolved into something bigger that creeps up on me monster. Randomly every single day? Yes. Yes. There's the podcast.
That familiar voice is multi-hyphenated human being Joy Spring Trevino, whom I met when I was a new DJ at Magic some years back. It's nice to watch how people grow and evolve in their roles in life, and Joyce is someone I know who can eloquently express herself, and I really want to know what's going through her pregnant little mind now that she and her husband, Juancho, are about to go man-to-man defense with two kids. Describe mom anxiety for us, Joyce.
It's insane. The anxiety is... This is probably the most meaningful anxiety that I've ever felt, because it's not for my own safety or sanity. It's the anxiety of being a good enough human being so that you can be good enough to raise up good enough human beings. I think the anxious part of being a mom is not just taking care of a child 24/7, but having this knowledge that the child will eventually grow into a full-grown adult. And you will have been responsible for majority, if not a lot of the things that that person has become, will have become, diba? So yun yung anxiety ko, and it's a huge responsibility. It's incredibly difficult to balance your own personal, individual battles and struggles, because that doesn't go away once you become a mom. And then, of course, you also have to take care and love and hold space for your husband, which is an entirely different monster on its own. I don't use monster lightly. You know what makes me anxious about being a mom? I'm not gentle, kasi Ricky. I mean, I'm sure you know this about me. I'm not the gentle, slow to anger, slow to speak. I'm not a soft person. And even though being a mom requires you to be strong and protective and nurturing, it also requires a lot of gentleness. And that gives me anxiety that sometimes maybe I'm not the kind of person that my children need me to be. And I'm constantly doubting myself. And I constantly think about how will me working out my own struggles and difficulties affect the way that Eliam is growing up. That's a to add to your anxieties, guys, think about that.
They don't tell you these candid mom thoughts in the maternity books. Oh, how powerful the mind truly is. especially the mind of a developing child, which you should also be very mindful about.
Like this one kwento. When I can't, medyo bingi kasi ako. Hindi ko alam kung dahil sa epidural or something. I blame it on the epidural. But every time I don't hear my husband or anybody who's talking to me, I go, ha? Hindi ako, pardon. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Ha? And ha? Aliyah, I kid you not, started saying, ha?
Oh, he picked it up! Oh,
he says, ha? Ha? Ganun siya. And then when I laugh, I go, and then he goes,
he's like you. Okay, wait. Okay, so this isn't so bad, right? It's not so bad.
I mean, it's not bad if you think that it ends there. But does it?
Only time will tell, Joyce. Only time will tell. In her podcast, Adulting with Joyce Spring, she paints a picture of her anxiety as a single woman and how God has helped her overcome it. So I ask, what's so different now that she's a mom?
Even more so. I think I've dug deeper in my faith as I've become a mom. Mm-hmm. Because even during my first pregnancy, my pregnancy with Eliam, I realized that majority of the things that you go through as a pregnant woman, and now that I've been going through being a mom, it's just not in your hands. Many of it is just in God's hands, if not all of it, honestly. And that was something that I had to grapple with. I had so many different fears and anxieties being pregnant during the time of COVID, especially during the time that I was pregnant with Eliam. And I was just constantly fearing, what happens if I get COVID? What happens to my baby? How is this going to affect him? Should I get the vaccine? I was pregnant and this was new. There were a lot of anxieties, and I had to really pray about that. And I realized that, you know, I kept listening to this song, My Life is in Your Hands. And I kept praying to God that my child's life is also in God's hands. Like, I can try to cushion everything. I can be as careful as I need to be. But sometimes things just don't go the way that you plan. And majority of my walk as a mom and as a wife now is rooted in my faith, because I just can't handle it. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of anxiety, a lot of difficulty. But knowing that God is in control, that my life, my family's life is in God's hands, that gives me a lot of peace. And that makes me accept that there's this facade and mirage that we've created, thinking that we have control over everybody's lives around us. But if there's anything that COVID and this pandemic has taught us, it's that we really aren't in control. Life kind of just happens, and it shocks us, and it's painful, and it's sometimes a lot of suffering for a lot of the people that we love. And if there's anything that you can really just hold on to, it's your faith and the way that you respond. So I have become more rooted in my faith throughout this journey. I think one thing that I've learned being a wife and a mom is that I can't do it. I really can't do it. I probably was not made to be a good wife or a good mom, but by God's grace, I'm learning. It's a step-by-step process that's rooted in my faith and also hinged in pragmatic steps to become a better human being every day.
So for this delicate episode on anxiety, I was able to sit down with cognitive psychologist Dr. Maricar Fajardo and asked as much as I could to get to know our good buddy, Mr. Anxiety. Listen in on how to spot anxiety, what to do, and who to seek out. This episode feels just like a shoulder to lean on, so I hope you enjoy. This is Mother of Fact. Hi, Doc. Good morning.
Good morning, Ricky.
Good morning, Doc. Thank you for agreeing to guest on my podcast. You are a cognitive and developmental psychologist.
That is correct.
Wow. I hope you don't mind me asking, Doc, how old are you?
I am 47 years old.
Wow, 47. How many years in your 47 years, Doc, did it take you to become a cognitive and developmental psychologist?
It was about 6 to 7 years in total. After I graduated from college, I took my master's degree in cognitive psychology, and then I got into my PhD. I was saying, if I'm going to go for my master's, I'm just going to do this all and take my PhD as well. It's funny because if you look at the history, for college, I took business management.
Oh.
And then prior to that, I also took a course in political science in Ateneo. You know, the dilemma of a lot of students now, especially those who are graduating in high school, is that they always tell me, Doc, I'm not sure if I chose the right course for university. What am I gonna do? So I always, you know, tell them, it really manifests itself at the right time. There's no such thing as planning things out. You can always change your mind because you are in a constant state of evolving, and that includes your desires. That includes your dreams. So it just makes sense that you don't know initially, but you will know, and the answers are going to come when it's time to know these answers.
They'll come when they come.
They do. You have to be patient and just trust that it will come. But you have to give it your best shot every time, right? Even without knowing.
And that's the episode. Thank you so much, Doc, for No, but yeah, that was so insightful. And this is, I think, one of my favorite reasons for seeking out psychologists and having conversations with psychologists is because they can converse and communicate really clearly what you've been trying to jumble up in your brain. And you said that so eloquently. And, you know, I just wanted to dig a little deeper before we get to the main topic, which is anxiety. So it took 6-7 years to become a cognitive and developmental psychologist. Like, that was the path in life. But did that have roots elsewhere in your childhood?
Yes.
Okay.
It all began when I had this tendency for the arts and the creative arts and arts and craft. I've always been that kind of child wherein I would, you know, put beads together to make a bracelet or to do art or to build things with my hands. And so as I got older, when I had, you know, my own home already, so I live in a subdivision, I said, what if I put up some sort of art classes for kids in the summer when I wasn't studying, right? And so I was like, okay, I'm going to tell my neighbors I'm going to be offering these art classes. And then kids started to come, right? And so we would do things like painting, you know, the visual arts, arts and crafts, making bags, making clay, making things out of nothing. I noticed that I enjoyed watching these kids work. I enjoyed watching how they interacted. I enjoyed how they behaved. That sparked something in me. I said, I would like to continue observing children. I wanted to know how their thoughts and their feelings worked. And that's really when I decided, okay, I'm going to take up a course in psychology, but I had no idea how to go about it. So I did some research online and I found out that to be a psychologist in the Philippines, it's not enough to have a diploma or a certificate. You really have to go for a degree in psychology. So that's the roots. It's kind of like I did not find psychology. Psychology found me in the sense that it presented itself as me observing the children and it called me and said, this is it. This is what you really want to do. Because it always was an issue for me back then. I didn't know who I wanted to be. And so it found me. That's how I explain it to people. So it's really important to listen to your passions as an individual growing up, because it really directs you to what you perhaps want to be in the future.
I'm so happy, Doc, that you found your passion and that you're really thriving in it. What exactly is a psychologist's role in society nowadays? Like, what does your work entail?
Okay, so basically what we do is a combination of assessments, which means observing individuals' thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, trying to find out which areas are weaknesses and how to transform these weaknesses into strengths. I mean, that's how I can best describe it. We are a guide to individuals, just making sure that they have a balance in their lives, because a lot of individuals I notice, really the reason behind any dysfunction is because their lives are skewed. You know, the basics like exercise, appetite, social interactions, spirituality, they're absent. They're not getting the right amount of sleep. So it's really all about helping individuals discover who they are, what the quality of their thoughts are, how they feel, how they behave. I think that generally is the role of psychologists.
Do you think, Doc, nowadays, you know, in the year 2022, with everything that's been going on, do you think that there is more of a need for people to seek professional help like psychologists?
Yes, I think so. I mean, especially with the advent of the pandemic in the past 3 years, in my practice, there definitely has been a spike in levels of anxiety and depression. So for someone who does not have anxiety, it suddenly manifested. And for those already with anxiety, well, it leveled up from, for example, a mild level to a severe level even. So when I explained earlier that we are a guide, really, it means a psychologist may be very helpful with, you know, how you progress into life, really. So also, the way I explain it is, it doesn't mean that when you see a psychologist, there has to be something wrong. Like you have a problem to share about, right? It can mean talking to a third party, like somebody else outside of your circle, who you can be assured of confidentiality as well, right? And to just share successes, even good news. There's something therapeutic about talking to another person who can be very objective and non-judgmental.
This sounds a lot like mothering, Doc. You sort of want to be that safe space for your child. You want them to tell you their secrets and just have that ultimate trust in you. And so I was wondering, are mothers a special case when it comes to psychology, when it comes to dealing with them? Do they have specific special issues?
Yes, they do. In fact, the issues are very unique because a mother's role is so special and so endearing in that she oversees, you know, the family dynamic. She oversees the care of her children. She has a very direct impact on a personality of a child.
That's so scary, Doc, isn't it? That's so scary.
It is. And not a lot of mothers also are aware that the gravity or the impact of her presence in their child's life. And they're not aware, I'm molding na pala my child this way, right? So, and as early as, for example, 4 to 6, that's when a child's personality is being formed. So it's so important that you be present, you give feedback, you pay attention. And who is there to do that more than anyone? Although every member of the family, I'm sure, right, has an important role, but mom is the person who's usually always there.
Truly.
So the mom is the one who directly impacts and molds this kind of human being, right? So what a responsibility, right, do mothers really have?
Grabe nga. So, Doc, you must get a lot of, do you get a lot of mothers that come to you that seek help? Just somebody to talk to, somebody to process all of this?
I do. And also, even when I see their child, for example, I always see the mom anyway. So it's like I'm seeing always two, because moms, most of the time, they do want to be involved.
Yeah.
So after I see their child, they would say, Doc, can I talk to you after? Of course, there's always a parent conference involved in any of my consultations.
Yeah. And that's great, right? Because, you know, that just means that the mom wants to learn more about her feelings and about what's going on. So can we talk a little bit about anxiety in mothers? But before that, what is layman's term for anxiety, Doc? Like, how would you really define it? A clear definition.
Anxiety, yeah, in very simple terms, anxiety is simply worry. or a sense of nervousness about the future. It's really not about the present. When you say, I'm anxious about something, I'm worried about something that might happen in the future. That's what it's all about.
So it's something to do with the future.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that relate to with mothers?
For example, what am I going to prepare for my family? What food am I going to prepare for my family? Like meal planning, right? That's an anxious, I think, responsibility being a mom myself, right? I'm always thinking, what am I going to serve for breakfast, lunch, and dinner today and for the rest of the week? That's an anxiety that moms have to deal with every day. Or just the usual, like, is my child safe? If my child is a teen and she is going out at night with her friends, she's going to wonder, who is she with? Is she safe? Where is she? How is she going home? Who's going to bring her home? Okay, things like that. And also, I think moms worry a lot about who their child is friends with,
mm-hmm.
who are the immediate peers of my child, right? Because
the influences,
especially with how our universe is evolving now, we really want productive, positive influences in our children's lives, really. And also with the advent of social media, mothers are usually worried about, what is my child being exposed to? What is she seeing? What is she learning? Right? I think today more than ever, it's so hard to be a parent. It's so hard to be a mom. It's so hard to be a dad. There's this gap in between, isn't there? Like, how do I communicate with my child? This is probably the number one thing that I always get asked about. How am I going to communicate to my child? Because it seems like we have a language barrier now. I don't understand.
Did they have this before, though?
I think we did in our own little way, but there wasn't any social media before. Therefore, there were no shortcuts in the things that they say. I don't know, things like YOLO. What's YOLO? or WRU. What's WRU? Or WYDM. What do you mean? Like, children text their parents like that, right? And then moms would be like, now what's this? What do you mean? The child forgot na, I am texting pala my mom, not my friend.
Oh, this gap.
Yeah, there's this gap. There's this gap. But I also found out that there's always a common denominator despite all of this. And it's also that eventually everybody becomes rooted in values still. And the values never change. They're universal. Patience, respect, love, care, understanding. But it's also a challenge for moms, I might have to say, because a lot of them also tell me, I don't feel respected by my own child. She talks in a certain way. I don't feel like the authoritative figure anymore at home because my child is behaving this way or saying these things. Can you help me, doc, try to understand? So I think more than anything, what's really important now is to root or ground our children in values. Make sure they're not forgetting.
This is an excellent point. Do values overcome anxiety?
It does. It minimizes anxiety. It minimizes the worry and the nervousness because there's a sense of assurance, right? Like if you teach your child honesty, for example, then you get less worried that, oh, my child is telling the truth. She's with this friend somewhere, right? So it does minimize the levels of anxiety.
Okay, so let's differentiate, Doc, clinical anxiety from worry or just fear of the future. How do you know that you're clinically anxious? Is that the right term?
Yes, that is the correct term. And you know that you're clinically anxious when there is excessive anxiety and worry. And this tends to occur for not less than 6 months. So if you've been noticing persistent levels of anxiety or worry in you for 6 months, then you know there's something up. There's something that needs to be investigated, okay? And also, the person has to find it very difficult to control the worry. Even if, for example, your mom says, so you're a mom and you tell your child, don't worry about that, we're going to be able to resolve this, then it doesn't help. The levels of worry is still there. It's still quite high, okay? And then the other symptoms are actually based on the DSM-5. That is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Behaviors and Thoughts and Feelings of an Individual. It's kind of like the Bible that psychologists and psychiatrists use. So there are certain traits, and I'm just taking a look at the symptoms over here. There are quite a number, but the most common will be restlessness and feeling always on edge or keyed up. It's like you can't be still. You're so restless. You get easily exhausted as well, even if it's just, you know, the usual things that you do on a day-to-day. You're wondering why you're so exhausted already. Can't concentrate at all. Okay, you tend to be very irritable. There's bodily manifestations such as body aches, headaches, muscle aches, cold hands and feet, palpitations, irritated stomach, like gastrointestinal issues, for example.
And this is all because of worrying? This is what worrying does to the body?
It is what it does to the body. And if you will notice, what anxiety produces is really a combination of psychological plus physical manifestations. So, for example, if you're very worried, you can start having cold hands and feet, or you can start having a headache, or you can start feeling dizzy, or in severe cases, your hair falls out, you get bald patches on your scalp, right? So there's always an interdependence between the two. These are the manifestations of anxiety. They're always about showing up in psychological ways, yes, meaning thinking and feeling, but it also shows up physically.
It's so funny, Doc. I feel like, because anxiety, but we were talking that it has something to do with worrying about the future. Is the present counterpart of that stress? Is stress like now?
Correct. The stress is now because you're wondering, what am I going to do? What am I going to do now to prevent it from happening?
And it's sort of the same manifestations too, right? It's also physical and it's mental.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. And it is the number one thing that individuals, that my patients see me for. Anxiety is so prevalent, really. So disruptive in individuals' lives. So
what happens, Doc? Let's say a mother is, you know, she's always anxious and she doesn't seek medical help. What are some of the, you know, the downsides to that? What might happen?
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to be able to share that you really got to look out for the red flags. It's normal for people to have anxiety and worry and nervousness,
it's normal.
Right?
It's normal.
It's normal. It's so normal. If it starts to interfere with your daily functioning, meaning you can't be a mom because you can't cook anymore because you feel something, or you can't drive to work anymore, you can't even show up to work anymore, you can't take care of yourself in terms of hygiene, you can't communicate, you isolate yourself, those are red flags. You have to acknowledge and recognize them within yourself. And that's when you have to consider reaching out already to a professional for guidance. Yeah, for an assessment to find out. Because remember, anxiety tends to snowball into something bigger. So anxiety could be mild and it's just anxiety really, but then it can turn into generalized anxiety disorder if left untreated. So you really have to recognize these things and seek help, seek for support, seek for assessment as, you know, as soon as possible.
Yeah. We don't want that, right?
And yeah, because we want to have a proactive approach.
Yeah.
More than a reactive approach to anything, not just when it comes to anxiety. You really want to be proactive rather than it's too late now. The anxiety has worsened. You have to take meds now, which I don't tend to recommend because I'm a very conservative psychologist. I want to work it out through therapy first. So it's better to have a preventive approach.
As you know, mothers, we foster life. You know, I think we change chemically when we birth out other human beings. But does that affect anxiety and postpartum depression? What is the relationship?
Yeah, so we have postpartum depression, but we also have postpartum anxiety.
It's different?
It's different. It's very different because postpartum depression means low mood.
Low mood.
As yeah, walang gana. Walang gana. There are many facets to depression, okay? And depression outside of pregnancy is very similar to depression with pregnancy in that there's loss of pleasure, there's fatigue, there's sense of helplessness and hopelessness. Sadness, crying spells, lack of motivation, can't sleep, can't eat. So it's the same when someone is having postpartum depression. Sometimes, however, it's even magnified because now you're becoming aware that you're responsible for an entirely human being.
Yeah,
right? Plus, there are so many hormonal changes in the mother's body that is beyond her control, right? And so it can translate into postpartum anxiety. So this is about worry naman. If depression is about low mood, anxiety is about being extra worried about what's going to happen to me, what's going to happen to my child, am I going to be able to raise her well? You know, it's different. Depression and anxiety are really different. But yes, postpartum depression can easily translate into postpartum anxiety, and they are actually comorbid with each other, meaning they can exist side by side.
So it's not surprising. Wow. Is there a way to avoid that, Doc?
Well, if we're going to be talking about postpartum anxiety and depression, there are ways that we can improve how we feel and how we think, but in large part, it's hormonal.
Oh.
So, which means it has to happen in some way.
Uh-huh.
We have to go through the motions. Mm-hmm. So it peaks, I think, after 2 to 3 days after giving birth. Mm-hmm. And then after that, a mom tends to start feeling better already. So part of it is, yes, we allow the hormones to gradually stabilize. The other part is that family members and friends can help, try to help make the new mom feel a little better.
Yeah. I do hear that a lot. So I have 3 kids, Doc, and I remember that it sounds accurate, your 3 to 5 days. Because whenever I would take them home from the hospital, like the first night at home, it would just be the most uncomfortable, the most nostalgic, na weird. It would just be a very weird day. And maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of crying.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even know why you're crying. You're just crying.
Yeah. Also, you really just have to go through it, no? Maybe trying to avoid it would be detrimental pa nga.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Trying to avoid it or trying to even question, like, why am I crying? Why am I feeling inadequate as a mom? So the more you doubt yourself or the more you question yourself and tell yourself, no, you shouldn't be feeling this way, the more it gets magnified.
What is a good mantra to say, Doc, as a mother, if you're feeling some sort of way like that?
So anything that is like anything that can validate you as a person, right? I am enough for my child, right? I am responsible. I am grateful for having a child, for being a mom, for even having that opportunity to be a mom. Yeah, things will get better over time. I am present. I am here. I am capable of taking care of my baby. Right? So, yeah.
Aside from yung mga mantras like this, Doc, that sort of bring you back, is there anything that... is there anything physical that you recommend some of your mom clients to do to sort of ease this anxiety that they have?
Okay, so the goal really is to restore the individual's sense of day-to-day routine, right? So as soon as the doctor gives the mom a go signal, she can start getting back into exercise, for example. The things that she used to do before getting pregnant, she can exercise. So again, now we're watching out for creating balance again in that mom's life. Make sure she gets exercise. Make sure she gets sunned. Sun.
Vitamin D.
Mm-hmm. Vitamin D. And make sure it's before 10 o'clock in the morning, because after 10, the sun can burn you or it's not healthy for you anymore. Make sure the mom gets enough sleep. As much as possible, though I know it's hard for new moms, right? Make sure the mom eats properly also and adequately, right? Especially for breastfeeding moms. Make sure that she has time still to connect with friends and family, that she does not isolate herself, because there is a tendency to isolate oneself also. Yeah, engage in mindfulness meditation, I know helps. So there are many apps available that you can just turn on, put on your earphones and listen to the guided meditation just to ground you. And it helps with the anxiety as well.
How about for the partners listening, Doc, who are living with, you know, people who go through anxiety on a daily basis? Like, what are some of the ways that they can help mom with her anxiety?
Yeah. So I think really is to make a deliberate effort, an intentional effort to reach out to the mom and ask her, how can I help you with this? May I help you with this? Or how are you feeling? Are you feeling tired? Is there anything I can do to help? Small gestures such as buying mom's favorite food maybe can put a smile on her face. Right? Surprising her with whatever, roses, chocolate. And for me, number one also is presence, like the presence of the partner. If partner is working, like messaging her every now and then, right, is really important. But mom wants to feel she is partnering with someone who is involved.
Sorry, Doc, akala ko presence, like actual presence.
Nothing beats presence.
Yeah.
Right? Nothing beats that. Like, moms right. always want to be reassured that she can handle this new responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, a present now and then wouldn't hurt. That's fine.
Of course. Of course.
I mean, that's great for my mental health. I don't know about you guys, but yeah. Doc, again, I just want to thank you so much. What an insightful talk. Do you think all of this was common, not common knowledge, but do you think all of this was studied, like, when was this all uncovered, that mothers had this kind of anxiety? Is this a new science? Has this been around for years and years and years?
Yeah, it's been around for years, but, you know, the way that psychology and science develops is we base it on experience and on narrations of individuals, and so for example, just to simplify it, that's how scientists came up with the terms, right? For generalized anxiety, social anxiety. They were present already before, but, you know, the labels weren't there before. Individuals had been experiencing this the world around for so many centuries, time immemorial, really.
And they just never came forward. They just kept it all in.
Yes, of course, a lot of them came forward, which is why we are where we are now. Because of the narrations and of the experiences. So
many more things can develop psychologically in science, right?
Absolutely. And that's why the DSM that I mentioned earlier is now the fifth edition.
Oh. wow.
The first one is so different as well. There's a lot of modifications. There's a lot of qualities and features of each personality disorder, for example, or mood disorder.
So I don't mean to give you anxiety, Doc, but can you imagine our children and what the effects of social media will have on their mental health when they're adults?
Absolutely. I can't imagine how it's going to evolve.
What are we going to do?
But at the same time, I'm also confident as a mom that there will be ways around this. And also our children are going to be smarter as well. Like, for example, like the Gen Zs and millennials that I handle now, they make it an option to just close their accounts because they know it's not good for them. Yeah, so they just make that deliberate effort of, okay, I am being bullied or I'm feeling worse about myself because I'm on this platform. So I'm just going to be closing it for now. Maybe at some future time, I'm going to turn it on again.
They're strong, no?
They are strong. So yes, the world is becoming complicated now, but so are our kids.
Oh, that makes me feel so much better, Doc. Thank you. I feel like I just attended a session. But Doc, you know, if there are parents listening who want to get in touch with you, who want to talk it out with you, how can they get in touch?
So usually I give out my email address. Should I say it?
Yes, please, please.
Okay, so my email address for my private practice is iambigthink@gmail.com. But if you want to reach me through the hospital through which I work, which is in St. Luke's Medical City in BGC, you can just call the trunk line and ask for my name and they'll give you the details there.
Yay, thank you so much. Doc, again, you can call BGC St. Luke's and then you can ask for Dr. Maricar Fajardo. Thank you so much again, Doc. I feel so much better and I'm sure everybody listening felt so much better as well. Thank you so much for dropping by the show.
Thank you also.
Mother of Fact is proudly an Anima podcast. Check out other great content by following Anima online at Anima Pods on Twitter and Instagram. Digging the podcast so far? Leave a rating and don't be shy to record a voice message for me. You might just end up in the next episode. Click the link in the description or hit me up online. It's @RickyFlow.